Sunday, August 15, 2004, and please give a warm welcome to our second speaker, John.
All right, John. My name is John. I'm an addict. I got to Narcotics Anonymous in 1970, and I stayed here till 1975, and after 1975, I headed up to here with all of these people. And bottom line is, I wanted to use again. I couldn't imagine going the rest of my life at that age without using drugs or anything like that. So my relapse lasted me 9.5 years, and I'll kind of start my story at the end of that 9.5 years. I had a seizure, and I woke up in the hospital with these real bright lights shining at me, and this guy comes walking in the hospital room and says, you need to go to a... He said I needed to stay there for 7 days and get the stuff out of my system. And I told him, like, I got a lot. 7 days, you know, I don't know if I can stay here 7 days because I got a lot of stuff I have to, get done. I got to, extremely occupied so I had nowhere else to go, so I stayed there for 7 days, and at the end of the 7 days, this other guy comes in the hospital and says, you need long term spot to go, and I wasn't sure what he was even saying, and I asked him, how long is that? And he said, well, 7 months, 8 months, 9 months, get yourself into, so you won't have to use any more than that. I was thinking, and my thoughts were, well, long term, 7 months, that's a long time to go somewhere. And so I finally said okay, and he drove me there, and we have up on the hill that I went to, and I got out, I started walking up to the office, and this guy ran up to me and he wanted to hug me. And, I wasn't sure what was going on, and, I was kind of, scared or, I just didn't want to be hugged. I just didn't feel like this guy should be hugging me. I couldn't figure out why he wanted to hug me. This other guy says, I got to read you the rules to this recovery house. And I says, oh, okay. I don't know how you guys are feeling after 7 days, but I wasn't feeling that hot. And he started reading me the rules of this recovery house. And he went on and on and on and on and on. It seemed like forever. And I was just sitting there kind of spacing out. And he says, do you understand the rules I just read you? And I said, oh, yeah, yeah. I got them all. And they told me in this recovery house that I need to get a sponsor. Okay, I'd get right on that. And, I didn't want to get a guy being a sponsor. I didn't even know how to go about finding a sponsor. Like, they said, you got to go to a Narcotics Anonymous meeting. If you like somebody, you can ask them to sponsor you. And, I didn't really like nobody. I didn't even like myself. And, this guy was taking a birthday for 16 years, and I was sitting with the rehab, and this guy says, well, why don't you go up and ask him to sponsor you? And I said, I don't know. And so I walked up to him and says, will you sponsor me? And he said, yes. And I said, shit. And, he said, I'll be glad to. And he knew about this rehab that I was in. And, I said to him, well, you got to come up there and pick me up once a week. But I was trying to get the guy to say no, it's a big hassle. I don't want to go, sponsor you. And he said, okay. And, I Oh man, I didn't know what to do. And they said, right out the first step. Right out the first, you know, I thought that was totally ridiculous. And so I wrote out the first step, you know, and, about three nights he comes up and he gets me. And he brings me out to the outside, you know, to the meetings. And, he says, is there anything you want? And, you know, I want a cigarette and a hamburger. And that's about all I wanted. And he said, okay. So he bought me cigarettes and he bought me a hamburger. Then he took me to a step study meeting. And, you know, they were working on the steps there. He was saying, this is Jack, and this is Bob, and this is Pete, and this is, my head was spinning, and I really didn't want to be staying there, and I thought the guy was, you know, like, what did I get myself in for, and, you know, this is going to be a big hassle, and, so I went about it, and I said, okay, yeah, I'm thrilled to be here at this fucking meeting, you know, like, you know, I can't wait to get the hell out of here, really. But, you know, that's what I was thinking. And, like, you know, I didn't want to be in no step study. And what happened is, then we got into the second step and the third step. And then finally, about 6 weeks into this rehab, he comes up to me and says, I'd like you to write your inventory, your fourth step. Oh, okay. And, I said, yeah, fine, yeah. And this recovery house, you're in a room with about five other guys just like you. And my roommate was writing his inventory. And I was thinking about writing mine. I don't know how anxious all you guys were to write your inventory, but, I was thinking about, I get right on, let's see. Where do I start now? And, and then the next day, my roommate gets thrown out of the recovery house. Take me. And, God bless you. I don't know why he got thrown out of this recovery house, but I go to sleep that night. And where he was staying was his inventory. And I would get that inventory, and this new coming with sharing in a step study that if you put everybody's inventory in the middle of the room, they're all the same just anyway, so, I really don't want the guy's inventory to go to waste particularly, and what happened is I grabbed his inventory, and it was real nice, the guy's spelling was nice, and he did everything the right way, and, I got on the horn with my phone and said, hey, Jack, man, I got my inventory. He said, oh, good, I'll come by the recovery house, and I get in, and I'll take you to the step study, and then you can read that to me. Well, Jack, all I thought I had to do was write this inventory. Where does it say that I have to read this? He says, that's the fifth step. Jack, we're going kind of fast here. I'm just trying to get the shit out of my system, and we're already going ahead of the fifth step. And he said, that's okay. So he got me, and he took me out, and he said, start to read your inventory. Well, Jack, I'm just about out of cigarettes, and I can go for a fucking hamburger, right? I want to do fucking anything but read this thing that I don't even know what the hell it is. So I started reading this inventory, and it started out kind of nice. It was more like, the reason I used, and my mom did this, and my brother did this, and little Ricky across the street had a sitter watching him, and he got molested by the sitter, and my mom wouldn't hire her, and that's why I used, and I gotta resent my mom wouldn't hire this fucking babysitter. Anyway, you know, so I was reading this inventory and I got to the part where I like going out with transvestites. I tried to explain to Jack that this isn't really my inventory. You give me one of these, it's going to be okay. You know, you keep coming back, and it's going to get good. And now I go back to this rehab that I was asking everybody runs up to me, man, don't you feel good? You're ready to get the fuck out of here, man. Don't bother somebody else. Don't be bothering me about some goddamn inventory. And, you know, the time went on in this rehab. I don't know if any of you guys ever been to a rehab, but, you know, like you rake leaves that aren't even there, and, like, you do the thing, you vacuum the hall fucking every half hour, it's like just for something to do, you know. And, I got a letter in the mail from me. The IRS. I thought it was a refund. And I thought I could get the hell out of there. Well, like, you know, I thought the government, you know, man, I can go move down to Santa Monica. I can go to the beach. I was thinking all these things in my head. And what it was is it said, you owe $30,000. Can you put a check in the mail right away? I got on the horn with Jack. Hey, Jack. Hey, yo. The IRS wants $30,000. What should I do? He told me to go to a fucking meeting. I told Jack these lame-ass meetings I go to, like, the seventh edition cost about $7. It took me a long time to get $30,000. You know, I'm going to get old before I get $30,000. And he says, go down to the wine garden. They got a narcotics anonymous meeting down there on Skid Row. And raise your hand and share about your thing with the IRS. So I go down to Skid Row and I raise my hand and I start sharing that the IRS sent me a bill in the mail and blah, blah, blah. And when I get done sharing that, everybody claps. I couldn't figure out what was wrong with these people down there. And this lady, after the meeting, she says, you should be grateful. Grateful for what? Now, you know, the IRS wants $30,000, blah, blah. And she says, you have an address. I should be grateful for having an address? And she says, she lived on the sidewalk. And so it started to get me thinking that, like, you know, I got to look at what I have instead of what I do not have. And a lot of times in Narcotics Anonymous, I've always looked at what I don't have instead of what I have. And what I have is, like, I got a lot, you know. I got a lot of stuff. Sometimes I get a lot of shiny stuff, and sometimes I get rid of my shiny stuff, and then, you know, I go get more shiny. Like, I like to shop, you know. I like shit, you know. Like, I like watches. I like, you know, I like stuff, and, you know. And, you know, but it taught me how to be grateful for having what I have in Narcotics Anonymous. And since this is a short meeting, I've got to speed it up because I got a few stories here. What happened is I finally got out of this rehab and, you know, I was around here about a year and a half and I saw her across the room. Because Jack said that God will put somebody in my life. And so I saw her. She saw me. I saw her. And I walked up to her and said, would you like to go out on a date? Oh, this should be Jim Dandy without me. And so she said yes. And I asked her how long she has in that kind of government. And she looked at her watch and go, oh, the, okay. And she was gonna watch. And I said, that's perfect. You don't have to say no more. And, you know, Jack told me to help out the newcomer that still suffers, that doesn't suffer, or maybe I'll suffer, you know, I don't know. But, you know, I took her out and I fell in love. I fell in love. And then 3 days later, she said her husband doesn't want to go out no more. And, I got on the phone with Jack. Hey, Jack, man, you know, this girl that I'm in love with doesn't want us going out no more. What should I do? He told me to pick up a newcomer and take him to a meeting. So I go to this other rehab. This is after I get out of this one rehab, and I get a newcomer, and I take him out. And, you know, I'm driving along with the guy, and the guy's bothering me. Like, he's smoking and chewing gum and talking about this nonsense. And then he asked me a question. When is it going to get any better? And I looked at this guy, and I'm heartbroken, and this guy's bothering me, he's blowing smoke at me, he's chewing gum, and he's, you know, he's making noise with it, and I'm gonna get in my seat of my truck all, you know, zooky and dirty, and goddamn newcomer. I said, never! I said, it ain't gonna ever get better. This is it. It's as good as it gets. And, I was heartbroken. I don't know if any of you guys have been heartbroken being clean, but, you know, I wanted a little something. Just, you know, like, you know, I like a Valium or so when I get heartbroken, or like maybe a Speedball hot. I don't know, just something to take the edge off. Maybe a fucking ounce of heroin. And anyway, I went on. I finally got out of that, and you know, I was working at the studios. I was fortunate enough to be able to work at the studios for a lot of years I was using, because the studios that everybody was using when I was there, so it was, you know, it was a place where, like, a guy like myself could use and get along real well. And, you know, and what happened to me is, you know, finally when I was working there, a couple of friends of mine came up to me and said, we're going to Vegas to see the NASCAR race. And I know about you guys, but all these cars do is they go around in circles like for about 3 hours. And, you know, that's how I said, no, I just wanted to go to Las Vegas. I didn't give a shit about NASCARs. And they said, you want to go? I said, sure. As they said they were going to drive up there, I said, well, I think I'll fly. And so I called up Southwest, and I said I want to leave on Friday and come back on Sunday. And they said, okay. And I got, you know, I got all hooked up, and I went down to the airport. I got on the airplane to Las Vegas on that Friday, and it was kind of raining, and the airplane, it took off, a big jet, and it, you know, it took off and was going along okay, about, I guess, halfway there, so we got hit by lightning. And the guy gets on the speaker and says, excuse me, we just got hit by lightning. Well, you know, when you're 35,000 feet up in the sky, like, there's not a hell of a lot you can do. And, you know, I'm thinking to myself, oh, okay, what does that mean? And, you know, because I wasn't sure what that meant. And, just now the stewardess comes by and says, it's going to be okay. Oh, I sure in the hell hope so. I guess. And anyway, we get there to Las Vegas, and my friends go to the NASCAR race, and I go to the casino. And for 3 days, I was in my insanity in the casino, you know, playing craps, playing blackjack, looking at the girls, and just having a good time. Like, drinking Starbucks and going a million miles an hour and all like that, having a great time. And then that Sunday, the airplane was going to leave at 5 o'clock in the afternoon. So we go down to the airport of Las Vegas and wait for this airplane. And it was 3 hours late because of storms. And what happened is the airplane finally got there, and it was kind of rainy. It was about 7 o'clock at night. And we got on the airplane, and everything was okay. And we started flying home to Burbank. And what happened is, you know, this guy sitting next to me was drinking scotch and water. You know, I'm not a big fan of scotch and water, like, but, you know, it did, like, smell good and didn't roll up like, you know, it would take the edge off, kind of, but, you know, I didn't do anything. I just watched this guy. And then he tells me, I know something's going to happen. And I said, and nothing happened to these goddamn planes. They fly back and forth all day long, all year round. They fly in the snow, sleet, summer, winter, whatever, and nothing happens. And this guy says again, I know something's going to happen. I said, look, man, if you keep saying this, something will happen to you, but, you know, it doesn't happen to your plane. And what happened is we finally see the lights of the airport. The Burbank Airport, I said, look, man, there's where we're going, there's the airport, there's the lights, see, nothing happened. And Burbank Airport is like, figure this sheet of paper here, the runway, okay? Now, what happens is, the airplane is supposed to hit right about here, and go down here, and drop you off, and you're supposed to walk and take your bag and say hi to everybody and have a good time. But my airplane landed where you get your bags at. We're going about 300 miles. It'd be like you driving a Chevy down the freeway at about 90 and just decide to make a right. Just make up my mind. It's time to make a right-hand turn. And so this airplane was going about 300 miles an hour down this runway, and over here's the street, Hollywood Way. So what happens is, you know, the pilot, well, he decided he couldn't stop in time for the street, and so he decided to make a right. And shit was flying, you know, the overhead luggage was flying, and things were going on. And this guy says, I told you so, and we just kept sliding, and we landed on Hollywood Way. And when the plane finally stopped right in front of the Chevron station, the gas station, I thought they were there to fill it up and we'd be on our way, but, and then on an airliner, they got slides. He's okay. He's about the only one in his that is okay. And what happens is the slides go down and the slide on the front of the airplane got wrapped around the fucking engine or wherever. And there was 150 people on this airplane. And everybody was yelling and screaming, and then we stopped and the slide on the back, you know, was there, but the plane starts filling up full of smoke, and I wanted a scotch and water real bad then. I needed something. It says something in the book that you can drink it for, you know, airplane accident. I don't know. I thought I saw that somewhere. I thought someone stuck that in there because there's been so many things going on in the book that I remember something about that. And I didn't do it, and the plane filled full of smoke, and this one lady was yelling, "Where's my son? Where's my son?" "What, bitch? Shut up. Just get off the plane." And then I find her son, and I says, "Here, take the mutt." And, you know, a slide is supposed to be like a slide. It's a playground where, like, you're supposed to, like, slide, right? Well, the slide on the fucking Southwest airplane was like, you know, like this. Like, you might as well just walk out of the door. And if any of you folks ever been on an airplane, you're kind of high up. And the fire department was there already spraying foam all over the fucking place. I couldn't even see the street. All I saw was foam. And the stewardess tells me, "Go down the slide. It's going to be okay." And, you know, it was like, you know, I go down the slide, then I sink in the foam. And the fireman runs up to me and says, "Are you okay? Are you asking me if I'm okay? Look, man, I'm not okay. I was just in an airplane accident. I want to go to Cedars-Sinai Hospital. I want a private room with a 19-year-old nurse." And a Valium. And you're asking me if I'm okay. What the fuck is wrong with you, man? No, I'm not okay. I want my lawyer. I want a lawyer down on Rodeo Drive in a big high-rise office. I don't want some funky lawyer in San Fernando Valley. I want an expensive lawyer. And then that night, you know, I get home and I get a phone call from Southwest Airlines. They tell me I got 15 free round trip airplane tickets anywhere they go. Look, you crazy bitch, I will never get on that Southwest airline again. You can shove those tickets with a white shine. The next day I got on the horn with my lawyer down on Rodeo Drive. I looked in the phone book. And I called this lawyer and I said, "Hey, bud, hey, yo, what you said to me is a client." He said, "Well, what happened to you?" "I was in an airplane accident." He said, "I sent a vehicle over right away." And we're going, "Hold on." He sends a vehicle over, we got a line, he sends me to therapy, you know, almost like, he says, "You got any psychological problems?" I got psychological problems, you bet. Where do you want me to start? I can start when I was 6 years old. That's only good from the airplane. I see planes in my dreams. He sent me to a fucking psychiatrist, and I go to the psychiatrist's office, and he shows me these fucking ink blots. And he says, "Well, what does this look like?" It looks like an airplane to me. And anyway, I went all through that, and I didn't have to use nothing. And, you know, that was really a miracle. And, you know, the meeting just about wrap it up now, and I want to let you folks know that you can go through just about, like, just anything around here. You know, you can go through a lot of stuff around here and not use no drugs. I went through a shoulder operation, and they gave me 100 Vicodin to bring home because the doctor says, "You will need these Vicodin because it's going to hurt." And so, you know, I was kind of afraid when I just got out of the hospital. So I took the Vicodin, and I bought them all then. You know, I waited 3 days, and after 3 days, I didn't need them, and then I threw the bike of them out. And, you know, that was something spiritual that guided me through this operation, that I didn't have to use anything after. And I will say that it hurt like hell. Like, I really went through a lot of sleepless nights, and, you know, I had to be speaking to my sponsor a lot, and, you know, I'm also a service, but not like you. Like, I sponsor a lot of the guys, and, you know, I'm not that into, you know, what it says in the book, or, you know, changing the book, because I don't give a rat's ass particularly. Well, like, you know, I just don't want to use or drink. And, you know, I want you guys to know that you don't have to use or drink. There's any drugs or alcohol. And, you know, you can go along and go through life and go through the ups and downs and, you know, be happy, joyous, and free 1 minute and want to shoot somebody the next minute, and you can be okay with that. And I do a lot of writing. I, you know, I write like every day. I keep a daily journal of my thoughts, and I got a son, and, you know, he's older now, and, you know, one of the reasons why I first got the narcotics, and this time I got here, September 30th of 1986, and I managed to stay around here, and when I'm asked to speak, I speak, and I try to add a little sense of humor around here, because, you know, we don't get to, you know, like, you know, we take this real serious, and I take this real serious also, but I just try to add a little, like, you know, that life isn't that bad, you know, it's like, when you stop using, it's going to be okay. It really will. If you're new or confused or whatever you are, it's going to be okay. I like to socialize also. I like to go out and fellowship. You know, sometimes I make myself go fellowship with friends of mine, and sometimes it's easy and sometimes it's not easy. Sometimes I don't feel like it. But about 3 years ago, I went to the German Shepherd Rescue, and I got a female German Shepherd, and she is the light of my life. You know, like, I go home, and she's always happy. She never asks me, where have I been, or like, you know, what did you do, or why are you late, or this or that. You know, she's always really happy to see me, and, you know, I lay down on my bed to kind of stay down, and she runs in my room and tears the bed and pulls the sheets over the blankets, and she takes her mouth and she clamps on my arm, but she doesn't really, you know, want to hurt me, but sometimes she, like, scratches me, and, you know, I run after her, and, you know, like, I give her a hug, and she wants to go in the car and go bye-bye. She don't give a shit where we go, but she's partying and having a good time. And I want my life, I want to be just as happy as she is. I want, like, my dog, I look at my dog, and she's happy. She's happy, joyous, and free. All she wants to do is go bye-bye. She don't want nothing. Like, she just wants to go bye-bye, have supper, get her dog bone, get scratched, you know, get hugged on. You know, that's all we want around here, is just to be happy, just to go bye-bye. Well, like, can you imagine just being happy to go bye-bye? I mean, not have nothing, but just go bye-bye, and that's the next day. And where we go bye-bye at, it don't really matter to her. Like, you know, she can go around the block, and she'll be just as happy. She puts her head out the window, she fights at the wind, and she barks, and she smiles, like, she's got the big old jaw, like, you know, like, she went with... She's fucking happy. And I want to be like, I just want to just hang out, howl at the wind, You know, the fire truck come by this hound just to be happy, and we gotta stop now. And you know, I don't like speaking on this thing either, because like I said there, and sometimes when I was younger, you know, it was like hard for me to speak in front of the room, you know, the classroom. And then when I was locked in the hospital after the Vietnam, you know, they used to give me Vicodin, and they used to give me Valiums. And the doctor gave me Valiums and said, "Do you like the Valiums?" And all they really did is make me stutter slower. And, you know, but try to keep the humor around here, and just try to have a smile on your face like my dog. And she's going to be so happy when I go home. And, you know, I just want to let you people know you want to ride and be happy, Glenn, and thank you for being here.